So this is Parshat Ki Tavo, and as was pointed out before we started, yes, today is 35 years from the day that we came to Israel, Baruch Hashem. And we thought it was quite appropriate that we left our last Parsha there was Ki Tetzé, and our first Parsha here was Ki Tavo, so that seemed to make a certain amount of sense. V'yad Ki Tavo el ha'aretz asher Hashem alokecha noten lecha nachala v'yirashta v'yashavta ba. That phrase, v'yirashta v'yashavta, that you shall inherit it and you should settle it, is a phrase which is used by some, and this is not the only time it's used, it's a phrase which is referred to as some as the mitzvah of living in Israel. And living in Israel is not just living, you're v'yirashta, you should inherit it. In order to inherit it, sometimes you need to do things which are more than just signing a contract. Sometimes in order to inherit the land, one has to be a little bit more forceful, but all of that is included within this mitzvah of settling in the land of Israel. And then it goes on to tell us about a particular mitzvah, and the way that it's raised is, okay, this is, you know, the first mitzvah you need to do. Ki tavo la'aretz, this is what you do. Of course, I'm overstating it, because it's not really the first mitzvah. A little bit later on, there is something which may very well be the first mitzvah. We'll look at source number 6 for a second, which is the Ibn Ezra. So unusual for us to first look at the commentary before we look at the pasuk. But the commentary, the Ibn Ezra says in source number 6, Vizota mitzvah harishona leviatam. This is the first mitzvah. So what is it referring to? What is the first mitzvah when we come to Israel? So it says in source number 3, Vaya b'yom asher, see, that's b'yom. Vaya b'yom asher tavru at ha'yardain, when you cross the Yardain on that day, El ha'aretz asher Hashem Elokecha noten lach, v'kimota lacha avanim gdolot v'sadeta otam basid. You're going to put up these large stones, and you're going to put some sid on them. V'katavta lehem et kol divrei ha'Torah hazot ba'avarecha. And you're going to write upon them all the words of this Torah. L'man asher tavoa la'aretz asher Elokecha noten lacha eretz zvat chalav u'dvash, in order that you're going to be able to come to this land. Later on in Pasuk Vav, Avanim Shlemot Tivne, et Mizbach Hashem Alokecha, Valita Lava Lot Lashem Alokecha, there's going to be offerings, Vizavachta Shlamim, Vachalta Sham, Vizamachta, Lifne Hashem Alokecha. So, Vikatafta Alavanim et Kod Veritarazot, Ve'er Hitev. So, over here, we have this first mitzvah. So, instead of interpreting this by reading the words, but of course, we're using the words, I'd rather use our imaginations a little bit, because there is something over here which, at least in my imagination, I see. And later we'll see that there was a Gemara that saw it based upon words and not just upon the imagination. So you're going to enter into the house, or sorry, the land, on the first day. You go in, and then you're going to write words of Torah and put them on stone. Does that remind you of anything? Of what? What does that remind you of?
Mezuzah.
Of a mezuzah. That means you go into a new house, so you put words of God, words of Torah on there. So this is a mezuzah. That's what this... Did that remind all of you of mezuzah before I started to frame it in the way that I framed it? Because you're all shaking your heads. Yeah, that's a mezuzah. That makes perfect sense. But you appreciate what I'm saying? Years ago, when Oslo was first signed, and I believe this is Oslo, there were so many of these along the way, that the deal was to give them Yericho and Aza. Yericho and Tchila. This is going to be first. So if you think about it, and I had heard at that point somebody who was very well, had a wonderful reputation in terms of Jewish thought, we'll just leave it like that, and he, his immediate response was, Yericho and Aza, those are the two doorways into Eretz Yisrael. Because again, imagine this is a house with a door, which means we go back to Parsha Peshach, Derech Eretz Plishtim. Derech Eretz Plishtim means, oh, the one way, one doorway into the house, into the land, is to go by Aza. The other way is the way that Yaakov Avinu came in, which is again crossing the Jordan River, and or that we see over here as well, crossing right around that area. So essentially what you're saying is, oh, those two doorways, we're giving away the doorway. When you give away the doorway, then you have to wonder, are you beginning to give away the house as well? Because in actus, of course, none of us think of it that way, because, you know, we don't even think about boats, I guess, if you start thinking in the past, oh, you can come to Israel by boat, but you guys think about planes, so you're just thinking about airports, and you're not really thinking about how they would enter, which there were roads in the old days. There were natural highways, as it were, you know, Derech HaMelech and so on. And just to think about, they're entering into the land. This is the doorway into the land. And the place they're coming in, again, is not all that far from where Yaakov came in. Of course, Yaakov came from the north, and they're coming from the south, but there's still, it seems to be that there's a doorway you have to go in. So now I'll say it again. So what do you do when you go into the doorway? You put up a mezuzah. So in source 4, the Gemara plays with this. I'm sorry to use that phrase. But it's trying to figure out what is a proper analogy in terms of mezuzah, and it has two comparisons. I don't know if you're going to love either comparison. One comparison is this. The other comparison is the way you write a get. So it says, which one is more similar to putting up a mezuzah? Is it more like a get, or is it more like what they did over here? And it's, again, it's working with the words of Kataftim and so on. So is it like over here that you write it on stone, or is it like there that you write it on parchment? And what really is a mezuzah? So it mentions this. Just a quick Dvar Torah, if any of you ever need to talk by Sheva Brachot. A mezuzah really creates the house in a certain way. It gives the house. You talk about build a bayit nemen b'Yisrael, and a bayit ish v'ish, and shechina b'neim, and so on. But the palatable way that that's done is actually by putting up the mezuzah. So there's actually an argument regarding mezuzah in the Gemara. You know, one says is that the Gemara says it can't be like a lock. But there's a difference among the Rishonim what a lock was. So some understood a lock went this way into the doorpost. One understood that it went this way, either into the thing above or the thing below. So therefore, is the way you can't do it either vertical, or the way you can't do it is horizontal? But so it's interesting. When the Rishonim, either you can't do it that way, you can't do it that way. So either it has to be this way, or it has to be this way. And then we find some early authority saying, oh, you know what, just put it on a slant. Then it's not good, sorry for the double negative, according to either opinion. But of course, you realize that there's a compromise taking place by putting that way. So therefore, in terms of Shalom Bayit, it becomes a wonderful message. The mezuzah represents the Shalom Bayit because it represents a compromise right when you walk into the house. And looks up for the Sfaradim, who have it absolutely straight. So you can do with that what you want. Also, you could do what you want with that. Actually, the Vilna Gaon also believed that the opinion, I believe, of Rashi was correct, and it should be straight up, you know, one way, and it didn't have to be on the angle. He felt the compromise was incorrect. So there went that Dvar Torah. So going back to this first mitzvah, entering into the house. And again, it's just interesting, you know, you take all three of those things and put them together. You have the mezuzah, and then you have the get, and then you have the creating these stones, which is sort of like a mezuzah. So I just want to point out the larger feeling of this parsha. On the one hand, we have Kitav, when you go into the land, and we have, you know, the first mitzvah, which we'll come back to, and then the second first mitzvah, which was really the first mitzvah of putting up the stones. And at some point, we move into this long tochacha. And the tochacha is, well, guess what? You know, you don't behave, I'm kicking you out of this house, right? You're, which means this idea of gerushin, of a get, of being kicked out, also is right over here. You can be kicked out. One of the great authorities, really first great, actually second, if I'll be technical, there was a very mysterious one before him, but one of the first great authorities in Germany was Rabbeinu Gershom. He was a teacher of the teachers of Rashi. There was a mysterious Sir Leon before him, whose name was, of course, Yehuda, Sir Leon. And Rabbeinu Gershom is called Ma'or HaGola, the light of the exile. So there are a couple of different takanot. Actually, there's many takanot that we say he made, and that requires a whole study. But one of the takanot is that you can't marry two different women. Another one is that you can't divorce somebody against their will. So there is this, shall we say, a little bit more, let's say, deeper understanding of this, is why he's the Ma'or HaGol, the light of the exiles, that when the Jews are in exile, he made the law that Jews will behave, that we won't take a second wife. So we say back to God, you can't take a second wife, which means that's the rule. And you can't divorce someone against their will. We go back to God. If we do this, then God has to abide by the same rules. You can't divorce us against our wills. And that's why he's considered to be the Ma'or HaGola, the light of the exile, that even though all these years of the Jews are in exile, still the laws that he created not only are the laws for Jews to keep, that God has to abide by these same laws as well. So that's the Rabbeinu Gershom. But I'm saying when you read this week's parsha, On the one hand, we have these are the rules that when we enter into the land that we're going to keep. And then afterwards it says, yeah, but you've messed up. And then there's this long, long tochacha afterwards. So we realize that the story over here is really not just about entering into the land, which is, I would say, some kind of a completion of a redemption process. But there's also this warning, or in the background there is this other possibility, and that is exile. And the exile is actually there, right there in the beginning and right there in the end. Because when we go back to the beginning and we talk about the first mitzvah, which is presented. Let's go back to the first source. Just one more thing about before we go there. The other thing that I imagined was perhaps in source number 7 was Yaakov, when he leaves Israel, puts up stones as well. And I was just wondering about the Yaakov putting up stones and leaving and then putting up stones when we come back, and the promise that he creates and so on. So as I said, that's why source number 7 is sitting there, apparently not to be pursued. So let's now continue back in source number 1. So you're going to go there, you're going to inherit it, you're going to... And then, you're going to take the first of the fruits which are from the land. We have a dot, dot, dot. You're going to go to that very special place, the place where the Shekhinah resides, a place that we generally call the Beit HaMikdash. So part of what you're saying over here is that God has fulfilled his word. You know, we're very thankful. We're here, again, context. We're here because God has promised this. Again, back to Yaakov, back to Yitzhak, back to Avram. God has promised us this land, and, you know, here we are. And it continues, and it says, you know, you go to the Mizbeach, Vanita, Vamarit Lefnei Hashem Lekecha, Arami Avid Avi. We go and we say a whole text, which, to be honest, we're more familiar with from Pesach than we are with the Bikurim, Vayered Mitzrayma, which is interesting because we're telling the story of exile. We're saying we went into exile, but the exile has ended, and now we're back, which means that even when we're back, we're talking about the exile, and we continue in the parsha. Why? Because there's always this fear, there's always this possibility that we don't live up to the rules we're supposed to live up to, and then exile once begin becomes a possibility. God took us out, and so on, and brought us to this Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. V'tani heveti et reshit pri ha'adama shenatati li Hashem v'nachta lefnei Hashem elokecha v'shtachavita lefnei Hashem elokecha. So what we're saying is we've brought this, we're serving God. Now, for those of you who don't remember, and I know that all of you do remember, I sort of wrote 5 books which were called Echoes of Eden, which then therefore, why? Because all of you used to tell me that everything always goes back to Eden. Actually, I have 7 books, I think, with references to Eden in them. So just the way that my mind thinks, and for the first part of what I'm going to say before we embellish this, is things which have said before, others have said it, and I've said it before. But when you read the words over here, it sort of jumps out at you. It talks about Reshit. And for me, it says Reshit, I think about Bereshit. Over here, we're talking about going back to a holy place, which, of course, we were exiled from a holy place. We're talking about exile. And the whole story of Eden is one of starting off in a perfect place and then going off into exile. But the other thing which jumps out at us, and this is the part that really should, is the fruit, which means the first fruit. So if I say, oh, there's a mitzvah, Bikurim is a mitzvah of the first fruit, and then I try to think a little bit, you know, deeper, well, why do we need a mitzvah with the first fruit? And then you say, well, you know, you guys sort of messed up that first fruit. Which means the first fruit we messed up all that time ago, and therefore we were kicked out. So now when we come into the land, we better do something right when it comes to the first fruit. So I'm just saying that to me is, I don't want to say pshat, but I do, you know, I want to say pshat, is just staring at you. And that's why it uses the reshit and something. I'll also just show you something which I thought was a really interesting turn of phrase. When the Mishnah refers to this mitzvah in source number 10, Kate said, "Mafrishin habikurim. How do you go and select the bikurim? Yored adam, and he uses the word adam. I just thought it was interesting. The word adam was not necessary in the Mishnah. It could have said a person, you know, yored. It could have left it out. Yored betocha sadeu. Someone go. I mean, you don't have to say adam. So I just liked when I was looking at that Mishnah. By the way, continue the Mishnah, and it says, what's the first thing? Just as a random example that it uses. Yerei Adam betoch sodei v'ro'eh te'ena. And he sees it. Yeah? So is this just like my imagination? Or I've poisoned your minds as well?
Yes, you have.
Yes, I have. Okay. Right? So we're listening to this idea of the first fruit and the first fruit, right? And I want to now go a little bit deeper, if you'll allow me. One of the things, if we go back to the sin of Adam and Eve, I sure hope we have this here someplace. Did we ignore it? Did we ignore the actual sin of Adam and Eve? And I'm looking if I actually ignored the sin. Now, nine is not perfect, and eight is not perfect. So, one of the things that happens in the dialogue between the serpent and Eve is that the serpent says, is that when you eat this, you won't die. Rather, you will become like God, knowing of good and evil. That's one of the things that he says. We'll come back to that. In earlier in Sefer Dvarim, there was a reference to. Let's take a look at source 15. Let's take a look at source 15. It talks about coming into the land. This is back in Parshat Ekev. Ki Hashem lokechem ebiachal eretz tova, eretz nach lemayim, ayanotu tomot yotzim bivikat uvahar. By the way, you also have a really strong, Eden feeling of the rivers which are flowing and coming to a place. But then it says, eretz chita sara vegefen utinav rimon eretz zayit shemen udvash, which is actually quite connected to the Bikurim in terms of what things, what objects the Bikurim apply to. Eretz asher lo miskeno tochal b'lechem lo techzar kol ba, eretz asher v'ner barzel mi'area techzov nechoshet. Okay, so here you're going to eat and you're going to eat, be satiated, and thank God for the land. He shomer lecha, however, be careful, pen tishkach et Hashem elokecha, that you don't forget God. Livul tishmor mitzvotav u'mishpotav u'chokotav v'shanochi mitzavcha yom. Pen tochal v'savata, lest you eat and become sated. Ubatim tovim tivnevi ashafta v'amarta bilvavecha. We skipped a little bit, and you're going to say to yourself, "Kolchi v'otzim yad yasatachay lezeh." I'm the one who did all of this. This, you know, it's the self-made man who worships his creator, right? It's a self-made man who sees himself as being his own creator, and look at all this that I've done. So it's the farmer who, and it's interesting, the farmer. I mean, the farmer gets up early in the morning, and the farmer, you know, he plants and he plows and he does all that he needs to do. So does the farmer somehow develop Yirat Shemayim or no? So now if you think about farming in a very deep way, farming is you take something which is dead and you put it in the ground and it comes back to life. I mean, farming is this symbol of Tchiyat HaMetim. I mean, it's also interesting when we talk in the Shemone Esrei and other places about redemption, Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. May salvation spring out of the ground, which means this person who's involved in agriculture, does he look at himself, oh, look what I've done? Or does he look and, you know, lift his head heavenward, which is actually what these psukim are saying, is that we really will end up getting rain from the heavens, and therefore Israel is hardwired for Yirat Shemayim. And every time that you're going to, you know, plant, you're still going to need your divine partner to make sure that there really is going to be water. So lifting your heads to heaven should take you away from this idea of Kochi Votzim Yadi. But it's very interesting now, just to go back, the serpent's sales pitch is, oh, if you eat this, you'll be like God. Who knows? You know, you'll be like God. And the person who thinks that the one bite of fruit, I don't care which fruit it was right now. I don't care if it was an apple, if it was an etrog, if it was a rimon, if it was a tain. I don't care what it was. Anybody thinks they're one bite of fruit away from being like God is obviously making a little bit of a mistake. And it's not just fruit. It's not a pill. It's not a line of white powder or whatever your favorite, whatever it may be. That does not make you like God. That's absolutely wrong. So it's interesting over here that we have the very first sin where there is this taking of the fruit. There is this rejection of God. There is this imagination that, you know, I could be like God. And then we have this tikkun taking place. And that's why I'm calling Bikurim a tikkun. The tikkun is the fixing. The tikkun is that you take the first fruit and then you say, okay, let me go back to the whole history, the history of exile. All that I've done today is I've just taken a little bit further back. The Ramid of it, Avi, I'm just taking a little bit further back in terms of wandering and going out. Oh, my father was a wandering, we'll go all the way back and we started wandering. Why? Because we made a mistake with the fruit and we ate that first fruit. So therefore the Bikurim seems to be this first mitzvah of fixing the first fruit, recognizing God is there instead of living in a world of some type of, I don't want to just say an illusion, but living in a world where you make believe that God is not involved in existence at all. Okay, so we'll take a deep breath, full stop, and then we could try to continue. There's something else that I want you to note, which would be very easy for us to ignore, because people always seem to ignore it. And that is, Bikurim is actually connected to a particular holiday. And that holiday is connected to another really important event, to Chag Shavuot. So, of course, I've complained about this over the years, and it makes no difference, that people love saying in Dvar Torah that Chag Shavuot is a special holiday. It's unlike Pesach, we have to eat matzah, and it's unlike Sukkot, we have to sit in the Sukkah and take the Arba Minim, that there's no mitzvot on Shavuot. Of course, if you live in a non-agricultural society and so on and so forth, the whole counting of the Omer was co-opted. It's purely agricultural between the Omer, literally Sfirat HaOmer. Guess why it's called Sfirat HaOmer, not Sfirat Yetziat Mitzrayim, because it's about the Omer, it's agricultural, till the going to the Chag HaShavuot, which that's why it's Shavuot, because of the weeks from the Omer. And it happens to be that historically Matan Torah is at the same time. But of course this takes us to the flip side as well, that when we're reading about Parshat Bikurim, is there anything over here about it which somehow takes us back to Matan Torah? That's what I'm just going backwards now. And what I'm saying is that the first concept of Bikurim, Reshit, is all about first and about that first fruit which was somehow messed up. We can then note, going back to the Reshit, source 8, V'yishtacheyo Hashem Elokim migan Eden lavod et ha'adama. So just realize something. When we were in the Garden of Eden, we didn't necessarily have to work the land. Quite the opposite. God put us there. Lovda u'lushomran. Question is what exactly that means. Part of the punishment, and I'll use the word again, tikkun, again, this is part of the irony, is that God creates for 6 days and then rests on the seventh, and man wants to be like God, fine. So now you get to work for 6 days and rest on the seventh, which means I'm calling the very exile from Eden, somehow there is a tikkun over here. But again, let's read source number 8 and just see which elements are there. V'yishlachehu Hashem Elokim migan Eden la'avod et ha'adama asher lukach misham. That man is sent out of Eden to work the land from where he was taken originally. Man originates outside of Eden. V'yigaresh et ha'adam. Now that's a really interesting turn of phrase. Because v'yigaresh means chased away, but also is a connotation of a divorce. V'yigaresh. And that goes back to what I said before in terms of the mezuzah versus the get and so on, and Rabbeinu Gershon and all of that. But yigaresh et Adam. So therefore, I don't know, do you want to call it, and God divorced himself from man? It's just an interesting term to chase him away, but I'm saying the connotation is interesting. Vayashkein mikedem, and by the way, note the word vayashkein, shchina, right? Vayashkein mikedem lagan Eden et akruvim, which of course we're going to later find inside the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash, v'lahad acherevim et apechet l'shmur derech Eitz HaChayim, to guard the path to the Eitz HaChayim. So what is the Eitz HaChayim? The Eitz HaChayim is Torah. In Mishle, Eitz HaChayim hi l'machzikim, by the Eitz HaChayim is Torah. That means that essentially man is being kicked out and man is going to have to start working. And over here we have a opposite Bikurim experience. I'm sorry for saying this, but this will become clearer soon. We sinned with the first fruits. Instead of taking it and bringing it from God, we took it from God. It's a total inverse of Bikurim. God says, take the first. Let's even say that we think we can eat from this tree, which we can't. What do you do with the first fruits? Then you bring them to God. But they didn't do that. They stole the first fruits. So they're really doing the opposite of Bikurim. So Bikurim is Matan Torah. Bikurim is the same day it works out as Matan Torah, which means the core of Matan Torah is the recognition that the first, the best of what I have is something which I need to thank God for, not just, you know, not ignoring God or not even just anything in my life, the first and the best. By the way, why is the first the best? Because when you have the first, it's the only. It's the best, at least momentarily. Could be later on there's better, but therefore giving the first is giving everything at that moment. So over here, man doesn't practice Bikurim. Man doesn't accept the Torah, and Torah was very short right then. It's not just that we went from 10 to 613. We went to 2, Lavda Ulashomra. Of course, you can argue that right away the third was thrown in, Lavda Ulashomra, and then you have, but don't eat from this tree. Maybe that's part of the Shomra. Some of you will claim that man couldn't eat animals at that time, so you have another one thrown in right then. It's a whole interesting thing what the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach are. Most of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach are, right, or were they all given to Noach? Were they given to Adam? So there's, just in terms of the halacha, study of the halacha of the seven mitzvot, there is a lot to be read, especially in the Rambam. So going back over here again, when I'm saying, well, I see something about Bikurim over here, and you're going to say, well, where do you see it? I'll say, well, because they didn't do it. And Bikurim is about accepting the Torah, and over here, they didn't accept the Torah. The idea of Bikurim is then you take it, and you take it, l'makom asher asher, l'makom asher, what's the exact phrase in the Chumash? Right? L'makom asher yivchar Hashem alkecha l'shaken shemo sham, and over here, they're being kicked out from the place Vayashken Miken, right? They're being kicked out from this place, and instead of accepting the Torah, you having these angels or kruvim guarding the path to the Eitz HaChaim. So what I have over here is a complete inverse non-bikurim, right? Exile that takes place. Of course, what's interesting to me then is what happens next, which maybe we never really saw in this context. And let's look at source number 12. The source number 12, I started by Pasuk Gimel. We probably could have started by Aleph or Bet. So Aleph is Vayada Adam, right? Et Chava Ishto, that Adam and Eve were intimate. The word Vayada is interesting, especially after eating from the Eitz Hadat Tov Ara. And we then have that she has a child and she names him Cain. And she says, because I've acquired a man of God, right? Right, kiniti ish. I don't have the chumash in front of me. Et Hashem, I've acquired. So it's interesting that with her first child, she does put God in the conversation. And again, what exactly is she doing? I don't know if we have real clarity, but let's just at least note there had been an absence or rebellion against God or hiding from God taking place in the third chapter. Now in the fourth chapter, having a child, maybe now she knows what it's like to create, and she knows what it's like and understands God a little bit better. He's the first. And she mentions God in this, and that's interesting. Of course, the problem is going to be, is this a way of serving God, or is this a replacement of God? And how does Cain himself process all of this? So if we read source number 12, maybe we'll notice something. V'yihi miketz yamim. Now that to me is interesting, because miketz yamim means here at the end of a very, very long time. The end. Miketz could be the end. Actually, miketz could be, you know, either side, but here, the way it says, v'yihi miketz yamim, at the end of a lot of time. So by telling me it's the end of a lot of time, it's right away implying something, at least to me. Chazal feel this and hear this, that it's not at the beginning. Which means, again, we've been talking until now the Bikurim. Ve'yavei Kain mi pri adama mincha l'Hashem. He brings from among the fruits. So over here we have mi pri adama. Man has been punished. Man is told you have to work the land. Man, if you don't work the land, you're not going to have what to eat. Kain goes, works land. But he does something which, at face value, is a wonderful religious gesture, just like what his mother did at face value, is a wonderful religious gesture. She somehow brought God into the conversation when she has this child, and he brings God into the conversation, when he has his fruits. And that should be wonderful. And it is wonderful until you see what comes next. The Hevel, who's always this afterthought, the Hevel Hevi Gamhu mi bechorot tzono umichelvehim. He brings the first and the choicest. And God then favors that gift. So at the time when Cain brought his gift, we thought, well, that's pretty good. And it was good until we noted what it was that Hevel did. And the difference should be obvious, and the difference should be, you know, everything for us, and that is that he brought the first, Mibachorot. Now, of course, Cain could have been very upset with this because he could have seen Hevel as being a passive aggressive and somehow attacking the first and saying the first should be sacrificed, and therefore everything happens afterwards he sees as being self-defense. But I think only a corrupt lawyer can go that way. So let's leave that. But he offers the first. And now you go back and you read that verse about Cain, Miketz Yamim, at the very end. From the fruits, not the first. Again, just compare that with the first, you know, source that we had today, where there it says, what do you do with the Bikurim? It says, Lakachta mi reshit kol pri adama. Right? You take the first. And what does he do, apparently? He takes the last. So therefore, he takes the fruits, he eats what he eats, he stores what he stores, and then he looks around, he's got some leftovers. Okay, what do I do with this? Oh, let me give to God what's leftovers. Now, you're going to say, but he gave to God, or he sacrificed, but it's not the first. And now when I think about it, there was an opportunity over here. There was an opportunity right over here. I can't tell you what would happen, but you know I like to torture you. You know, what could have happened, I don't know. But there was an opportunity for Cain to fix the sin that took place in the Garden of Eden when they took the fruit that God said you can't take, and he could have taken the first fruit and given it back to God, just like the Bikurim for us later on becomes some kind of a tikkun for that first fruit, but he doesn't do that. Instead, he brings the last fruit. So you realize that there's something over here which is profoundly wrong. And again, I'll say it. If you're not hearing me clearly, when I read the source about the sin of Cain, the most important word is in Pasuk Dalet, verse 12, Pasuk Dalet, when it says Hevel means mi b'chorot. And if that's not enough, mi b'chorot, he takes from his first, also michelveim, from the choicest. So it's the first and the choicest, rather mi pri adama, which mi pri adama was really good until you compare it. And when you compare it, then you realize what's lacking. But you don't even realize what's lacking until we get to this week's Parsha. When you're entering the land, you're going to become a farmer, then you give your first to God. So I think and I hope that this law of Bikurim suddenly took on this whole nother aspect to it. And there's two sides to that new aspect. One side of it is the sin of Eve, and the other is the possible tikkun of our first farmer, of Cain, and that unfortunately doesn't take place, and that's involved in the religious failing of Cain. Of course, it metastasizes and it turns to something far worse than that. It becomes murder and so on. But I'm just saying is right here, you can already discern what's wrong with what he's doing. And that is, again, only understanding Parshat Bikurim. And I'll say it again. Parshat Bikurim is really interesting because in the background of all of this, this is Matan Torah, or even better, accepting the Torah. So you have that, again, taking place in the background of this. You have entering into the land, an opportunity of having a relationship with God or not. So I'm just saying that that's what takes place over here, and it's only when we read Parshat Bikurim with that other wonderful word, Mireshit, which takes us back to Bereshit, then you begin to understand what happens in Eden on the one hand and what happens right afterwards on the other. And of course, the other thing hovering all over all of this is the narrative which is introduced by the Bikurim of exile and redemption. And the story over here is one of exile and no redemption. That's exactly the point. So was there an opportunity with Cain and Hevel of redemption? Which means if you bring the Bikurim in the right way, was there a possibility of redemption? Was there a possibility of Matan Torah? Was there a possibility of something else? But instead, it's this feeling, okay, I maybe have to do something for God, something that I have no use for, let me put God on that. God is on your top 10 list, but there's only 10, and that's after everything else is taken care of, then God is taken care of. And maybe that's part of the message over here is, where is God on the list? You know, people today talk about a bucket list, okay? Where's God on the bucket list? Did God make the bucket list, or it's not really there? So, and if God is there, so then how choice of an experience is supposed to be there? And I think that that's what the background of all this. But I want to take this in one more direction, and that's going to take us back to the second half of the parsha. I'm just saying that Cain makes an offering. Let him take the first fruit and offer it, and not just whatever's left over. He builds a mizbeach, put it on the mizbeach, and offer it to God, right, as a gesture towards God. We're not going to look at it, but if you want to take the challenge, source 11 over here, there is a long source of one of the early Hasidic writers, the Maor V'Shemesh, Rav Kolomenis Kalman Halevi Epstein from Krakow. And he does connect the sin of Adam HaRishon with the Bikurim. He doesn't say most of what I've said, but he goes in a parallel way. And we're not going to read all of this, but as I said, if you're interested in this much more, I think he blames Eve much more along the way also. So you will have the opportunity to take a look at this. But as I said, I want to take this in a slightly different direction. Just one person who I did find say that he should have brought Bikurim, look at in source 13, look at Rabbeinu Bachaye. Mi pri ha'adama, he took from the fruits, ha'yelo lavi Bikurim mi pri ha'ilan mi shevet aminim. He should have brought the choicest. Okay? He should have brought Bikurim. Okay? So, again, Rabbeinu Bechaye, but you know that already. I didn't read Rabbeinu Bechaye. I was looking for someone to say this. Somebody asked to say this. Okay. One more thing, as I said, for today. In source number 15, no, we did 15. In source number 16, it's going through the Tochacha. You know, we read the Tochacha very, very fast, and the Baal Kori reads it very, very quickly and quietly so nobody can correct him. And obviously we don't want that. A lot of people don't want that aliyah. I mean, every word, every letter of Torah is holy. And sometimes listening to something difficult is more uplifting. But along all the terrible things, there's a verse in 16, Kafchet, Kafchet, that says, Yikcha Hashem b'shigayon uv'ivaron uv'timhon levav. That God is going to end up striking us with shigaon. What's shigaon? So you know. The word mishuga, right? If you're looking, where does mishuga come from? Shigaon. So insanity. Good. Ivaron, blindness. Timahon levav. So what does timahon levav mean? So let's take a look at Rav Hirsch in 17. Timahon levav, choser bihirut. Lack of clarity. Arapol shel haragashot. Where even feelings become clouded and confused. Hamakshavot v'dimyonim, where a person's feelings, thoughts, imagination, everything becomes completely confused. That's part of the problem of the galut. In source 18, the Netziv writes, Shigaon kilkul hadat, shelotit bonin liot nishmar. Well, he's talking specifically about one issue, but it's again this confusion that takes place. Look at Timhon Levav, still in the Emek Davar. Chelik mehem shiru v'gam yavinu hara, avol me'otem halev shuke even mibli yachol asot mu'ma'ad. He's talking about confusion. He goes, maybe you're going to identify something which is bad, but you're not going to be able to do anything about it. You're going to become paralyzed. So it's this combination of confusion and paralysis, not being able to respond, seeing things which are bad, not necessarily understanding what's good, not understanding what's bad, and as I said, total confusion. But that shouldn't surprise us so much of the exile that takes place. This is in the middle of the Tochacha in this week's Parsha. There's a very long Tochacha, and this is part of what happens. I just want to note that all of that should have reminded us of something. The whole attraction to eating from the fruits, right? You'll be like God, your Deah Tov V'Ra, Eitzadat Tovara. So what, meaning, when you sell it as Eitzadat, tree of knowledge, if that is in fact knowledge. And that sounds really good. But what happens when you have its full name, Eitzadat Tov Vira? You'll get to know good and you'll get to know bad. Getting to know bad doesn't sound great. But getting to know good and bad doesn't necessarily sound great, especially because it may be worse than I'm saying it. Incidentally, I think I've told you this before, the Zohar calls it the tree of death. It just skips through everything else. One is the tree of life and the other is the tree of death. One is the tree of life, the other is the tree of knowledge of good and evil. The day you eat it, you're going to die. So the Zohar just cuts off all of this and just puts what it is, tree of death. So that should, well, it may be quite the opposite. It may be quite the opposite. Let's read the words in source number 20. Vativkachna eineshnehem, their eyes were open. Veyedukir arumehem, the first thing is they recognize that they're naked, which means, of course, that they've lost some type of innocence. We don't know how old they are in that day. But, you know, there's a point in the life of any child, right? An infant, when they realize, hold it, I don't have clothing on, right? And this should be embarrassing. And very, very young children don't feel that. At some point, obviously stage of development, they're going to say, hold it, you know, I should be wearing clothing. But, you know, the really young infant has no feeling. So essentially what happens over here is Adam and Eve, they grow up and they lose their innocence, which you can say is great. On the other hand, it may be terrible, but that's the first thing I'm saying. The awareness of nakedness. I mean, look, the others will say, now they realized also about sexual capabilities. And beforehand, because there was no Yetzirah, as it were. And now suddenly they look at one another in a sexual way. And that's why suddenly they realize that they're naked. And it's all about sexuality in the background. So continue. And then, Vayishmu. Let's look at the Zohar, the Tikkuni Zohar. In source 21, Umar Amar La, Vayoma Nachash Elisha, Afkimar Lokim Lotuklu Mikol Etzagan, V'kud Shebrichu Lo Amar. God didn't say you can't eat from all the trees, quite the opposite. God said you can eat from all the trees. Ela Mikol Etzagan Tochel, the Ihu Lo Mani Le, the Cholamechel Ela Mi Eitz Hadat Tovara. That he was just, the only one that God prevented was from the tree of death. But what is it called in the Tikkuni Zohar? What does it mean, Eitz Hadat Tovara? The Ihu Irbuvia de Tovara. It's a tree of confusion between good and evil. Look at the Rav Tzadok in source 22. Mizehu zhar devade mashiyado shahura yesh lo lev basar lishanot libo shlo yaseh rak yesh ta'ut b'yidiya v'chachma sha'omu l'tov ra v'lerav tov. I mean, people want to do good, but what happens? We convince ourselves that what's bad is good and what's good is bad. And that's what's still getting to us today. Shebo yesh irbuvia, because it causes this confusion. Umizehu zhar, and that's really what we're warned about. Uke shachata b'chachma v'ochal lo milara tov az nigrash migan umi etzachayim dehainu shenitin lo lev ha'evin tachat lev basar. The man became this being that lost real sensitivity and lost real understanding, lost clarity. There was clarity between what's good and what's bad, and total confusion. But by the way, if I do understand that Eitz HaChaim is Torah, a person who has no values, a person who can't distinguish between good and bad, can't learn Torah. Because you're going to say the other way around, they have to learn Torah. But if your mind isn't clear, and everything you're going to read, you're going to get the opposite conclusion, you can't be involved in Torah. And that's really what Rav Tzadok is saying over here, is that the result of eating from this tree caused total confusion, and therefore they just couldn't go there anymore. And see, what really should have happened, and this is hinted at, it's actually said in the Midrash, but it's hinted at in that more of a Shemesh that we skipped, is that it really should have been the other way around. I mean, I always joke about this, is this is how I know that Adam and Eve weren't Jewish. Because if they were Jewish, they would have done the opposite. They would have first eaten from the, right? God says, that the day you eat this, you're going to die. The other one is the tree of life, and if you eat it, you'll live forever. So Adam, if he was Jewish, then he would have eaten from the tree of life, lived forever, then eat from the other tree and said to God, yeah. Now what? Right? You just do it in the other sequence. But on a deeper level, if you do it in the other sequence, then everything is different. Because if you first have this perspective of Torah, and then you go into something which is good and bad, you have categories to put it into. But if you don't have categories to put it into, then everything becomes completely confused. And then what you'll end up doing is even taking the Torah and confusing it. And that seems to be at least on a level of remez. I don't want to say is absolute pshat, at least on a level of remez, what's taking place when Adam and Eve are being, you know, thrown out of the Garden of Eden. Why? Because they just can't, they can't take from the tree of life anymore. Because they'll live forever, but they'll live forever in a world which is confused because of what has happened to them. We will finish off with the Sfat Emet. Yeah, let's read the Sfat Emet and we'll see how much of this he brings together. Hemshech mitzvot bikurim l'mechiyot Amalek. He goes, don't forget the flow, because, oh, that was last week's parasha. This is this week's parasha. Where did we end up last week? Getting rid of Amalek. Dekatav, but it also, what does it say about Amalek? Reshit goyim Amalek. Right, Amalek is the first. He's the first one to attack us. Esav is the firstborn. Yaakov, right, is not. So over here, there is this reshit aspect of Amalek, and then there's this reshit aspect of the first fruits. Continues, and he says over here, ki Amalek, he chelik asitra achra, mutz v'tevin, shenit arev al yedei hachet, ki ma shekatuv arur ha'emin, ha'adama, v'itzvon tochan, v'kotz v'derder tatzmiach, remez milchama la'ashem ba'amalek, midor dor al dardar hanal. So, those of you who completely missed what he is saying, he'll be here. He said a mouthful. He said that Amalek is part of the confusion. It's the confusion of good and bad. It's part of the misuse of the first. The first fruit, which was not used properly, caused confusion. What then is Adam told that he's going to have to do? He's going to have to work the land. And kots v'dardar. Kots v'dardar means thorns and thistles are going to be the result, which means that not everything is going to be good. Not everything is going to be tov. There's tov v'ra mixed up. Just think now, it's just a brilliant analysis what he just now said, if you missed it. You ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now you're going to have to work from the ground. You're going to have kots v'dardar, and you're going to have fruit. But you're going to have to separate from the good and from the bad, because now the good and bad is going to be together, and you're going to have to create clarity within your, you know, the work that you're doing. But, okay, that was one level of what he just now said. The other level of what he said is, but do you remember when the war against Amalek was presented in Beshalach? There it says the war against Amalek is midor dor, from generation to generation. And he said, notice, midor dor is the same as dar dar, which means... Dardar is the coats and the dar is the thorns and the thistles, and he says over here remez again. He's not saying it's pshat. Remez. I'm going to read the line again for you. Ki amaleki chelik asitra achra motz v'tevin shenit arev al yedei achet k'mashe katav arur adama b'tzvon tochando v'kotz v'dardar tatzmiach remez right not pshat remez milchama l'ashem b'malek midor dor al dardar. That now we live in a world of confusion. But again, what did he say a moment earlier? But Amalek is the first. Amalek is Reshit Goyim Amalek. Amalek is from Esav the firstborn. And he goes on to say, Olam Tzricha Milchama Lavir Psolet V'Tarovet Michelik Asitra Acha L'chein Esav Hayah Bachor V'Yotzev Rishon. We always have to take away the stuff from the field that we don't really need, which, by the way, could well be connected... which could be connected to the straw as well, which Esav seems to be connected to. You have to take away the chaff and to separate the good from the bad in order to serve God. And he goes, L'chein Esav haya b'chor v'yatzar rishona, k'mo hakash shagadal mikodem. So this whole idea of Esav trying, at least on a midrashic level, to serve God and tell his father, do you take ma'aser as well, which is the next, right? Do you take it as well and serve God? But he eventually was not able to live up to the standard, and he ended up rejecting to be the firstborn. And by us bringing the first fruits to the Beit HaMikdash, we fix, do a tikkun on that very first sin, and we turn the curse of the land into a blessing. And there it says you're going to be eating, you know, with sadness, and over here it says you celebrate with joy. Because this is, again, the exact opposite of what happened eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. I just want to end up and say, and it brings Egypt into this as well, but I just want to end up by saying the following, that this parsha is about redemption and it's about exile. And even when we're redeemed, we have to remember the exile. But the reason we're redeemed, the reason we come back to the land, is that whenever we were out of the land, we still remembered the land. But I just want you to think a second. Every single time you make a bracha on fruit, you're recognizing that God created the world and God gave us that fruit. Every bari pri ha'etz is a tikkun of that sin that took place, of taking from the tree that God said you can't take from. And sometimes we just throw our brachot away without any real proper God consciousness. The second thing is after every meal, and we saw back in Parsha Tekev, instead of saying, Kolchi votzim yodio satachailaz, instead of saying yourself, what was the other side? No, v'chalta v'sabata v'rachta et Hashem alokecha, right? Ala aretz tova, and so on. But when we say Birkat HaMazon, just think of the elements. We thank God for the land. We make reference to the land of Israel. I mean, you could have been in Poland, you could have been in Baghdad. We make reference every time we eat bread to the land of Israel. We make reference to Jerusalem. We make reference that God should remember and that God should return us one day. Which means Jews, aside from the Amidah three times a day, every time we eat, we were doing some kind of a tikkun and longing for the land of Israel. And therefore, it's not just Bikurim once a year. For us, it was every single day longing for the land of Israel. And of course we can. Again, think a second. Exile for a people to be thrown out of their land was not unique in antiquity. For a people to be thrown out of their land and return is unique. For a people to be thrown out of their land and return and thrown out of the land and return is unheard of. But of course, when three times a day, at least, you know, could be three, four, five, six times a day, if you eat well, maybe more, then you'll be making reference to this. Please, you know, every time you eat, please bring us back. All of that seems to me, at least, to be an extension of this idea of the Bikurim. We want to fix that sin. We want to fix when we don't listen to God. We want to fix the confusion that we have when we think bad is good and good is bad, because that's ultimately what happens. That's what happens in the exile. That's what this verse is warning it. And that was an element that took place from the very beginning, which means eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil caused confusion between good and evil. That's part of what needs to be fixed. How do you fix it when you have a confused world? That's not all that easy. At that point, they were kicked out. Again, we need a world of clarified values. That's part of it. Bikurim goes together with Matan Torah. They have to go together. That's where the clarity is going to come from. We'll learn the values of Torah, and then we have clarity. But you can't walk into the values of Torah with confusion, because otherwise what you're going to have is confusion. Otherwise, instead of having a tree of life, you're going to end up having a tree of death. And there needs to be confusion, which means all of these elements over here, the clarity that God gave me, and I thank Him with the first that I have, that goes all the way back to the first fruit. It goes all the way back. There was a chance for Cain to fix it with his first fruit. Instead, when we come to the land of Israel, put up the mezuzah, right? Make it a holy house. Follow the words of Torah. Thank God with the best of what we have. And that will help us in this world of accepting the Torah, having clarity, and hopefully, you know, entering to the land becomes the first step towards the final redemption instead of a step towards what eventually previously had been exile. Shabbat Shalom.